Hi, everybody, and welcome to Mecha Dragon, a podcast about all the geeky and nerdy stuff you love. Brought to you by Captain Geek and the Dark Nerd. I'm your Captain Will.
And I'm your nerd, Jess.
Today, we're talking about Game of Thrones, the final episode of the final season. The Iron Throne is the title of the episode. Episode 6 of Season 8.
We finally made it.
We finally made it to the end. Somehow, some way, here we are. And boy, there's a lot to talk about. We're actually going to talk a little bit later in the podcast about the new Game of Thrones shows that are under development at HBO. There have been like 4 spinoffs and a prequel show announced. And I just want to make sure everybody knows up front that we will be talking about that after we get into all our thoughts about the episode. So let's get right to it. So Jess, why don't we start with your kind of first impressions when you first watched the episode and your sort of general overview thoughts about it.
And I can't wait till they come out with the Game of Thrones peeps for Halloween. Those will be great. I already had the Game of Thrones Oreos. They were just fantastic, you know.
Glad to hear it.
But yeah, for all of our faithful listeners, however many thousands of you there are out there hearing this, you well know what I thought about the last episode, The Bells, and it was a less than stellar review. So I was expecting this to be 3 times as bad as that. And I must admit, it was better than I was expecting. I felt it fell short in a couple areas, but they did kind of do a mediocre to all right job tying up a lot of the loose strings and stuff.
I see.
And overall, it was a good episode, not a great episode. Liked it, didn't love it. But episode five, I should say, is the worst episode of Game of Thrones ever put to film.
Wow.
Or digitized. Yeah.
Strong words. Okay.
We'll get into the little parts later.
Yeah. Well, my first impression was, I have to say, I was real satisfied with where a lot of things ended up. Right. I enjoyed the episode. I thought that it, you know, they avoided some pitfalls that a lot of people were worried they might fall into. And they kept, I think in the finale here, they kept pretty true to, you know, the characters that are left and a lot of the things that are happening. But I guess my main criticism of, it's not really this episode per se, but it's like how we got to this episode. And we discussed this a lot in our last episode of the podcast about the previous episode,
right,
is that I think they did rush through this last season quite a bit, maybe even the last 2 seasons, and I have some thoughts as to maybe why that is and what was going on, but we can get into that. So why don't we just go, so those are our general thoughts, why don't we just try and go through the highlights of the episode for us, and then we can get into more of an analysis. You know, what are, yeah. So first the highlights, like what, you know, excited us, disturbed us, etc. The first thing I'll mention is there's like a few seconds of just black, and then we open on Tyrion just kind of striding through the ruins of King's Landing.
Yeah, I'd say it probably picks up, 5 minutes after the end of last episode?
Yeah,
I mean, it's
everyone's like
still standing around in the streets, so we didn't pass much time.
Yeah. And you know, you realize after a moment that, you know, the background behind him, which is kind of out of focus, it's just like piles of dead bodies.
Right.
And he's looking and he sees like the dead children next to the dead soldiers. And then like some half naked guy walks past that's got like third degree burns all over his body. And you see like one guy just like sitting over in the rubble, just like with his face in his hands. And it was really very somber sort of a scene, and I think he even exchanged a couple glances with John, and that's when he went to go, and John tried to like send some guards with him, and he was like, I'm gonna go by myself. I'll see you later, basically. What was your thoughts on that scene?
It was ground zero, you know. It was just the calm after the storm, you know. It was just destruction and devastation and death, and it was just palpable. And like you said, you can see Tyrion trudging around and just surrounded by that. Yeah, they did a good job of, you know, really getting across how it affected you know, everything at ground level. It was, there was nothing left, you know. It was just a couple survivors and that's it.
Yeah, I think the scene was really there to drive home the horror of what had just happened. And because even though pretty soon after this, you know, there's that scene where Danny gives the big speech about how they're going to go on mm-hmm. and make the whole world free. It's like she has all these grand ambitions, yet she's describing what they've just done as a liberation, right? Rather than right. the horror of like killing all the innocent people. So I thought it was good that they provided that contrast. We don't have to spend like a lot of time yeah. on like every single moment, but sorry, go ahead.
No, but that that scene, you know, where she's at the top of the steps, you know, talking to the all the soldiers down before and doing her speech. Before that, they show her, I think it's John, going in towards that area, and you see Drogon fly overhead and then settle down in the castle. And as he's going up the stairs, you see Daenerys start walking towards.
That shot was awesome. And, with the dragon
yeah,
wings
and
flapping.
Yeah, you see Drogon's wings just, you know, eclipsing behind
that
her.
That was great.
Really
that was
cool
one of
scene.
The coolest. That's one of my favorite shots in the entire series. I gotta say, that was
right.
just really cool.
Yeah, and they had to put it there. It's like, come on, man. You should have done that like 6 seasons ago.
But before we get into more on that scene, like, I just want to give a shout out to Peter Dinklage, who just acted his nuts off in the scene where he goes yeah. down below and like climbs through the rubble and finds, you know, Jaime right. and Cersei. And mm-hmm. oh my God, his performance is just so powerful there. I mean, he's
yeah.
been great.
No,
like
he,
the entire
owned this
show.
Episode.
Yeah, he totally did own this episode. So anyways, that was just really moving. And so then, yeah, back to Danny. So John walks up there and I thought her whole speech was chilling. And I have to say, like, that whole scene when John's like walking up towards there and you see her banner like hanging right. on the ruins of the castle mm-hmm. and, you know, the Dothraki, you know, being their wild selves kind of wheeling around on their horses and the Unsullied standing, you know, in orderly formation. It was like, it really creeped me out because the way that they shot that was really enhancing the dread of the scene. And you kind of have, I had this like pit in the bottom of my stomach because now I'm looking up at Daenerys as like this tyrant and it was like really scary. Whereas before when I would see her in previous seasons and so on, she was never really filmed that way. And obviously the context was different, but she was always like this source of like hope and inspiration.
Right.
But now.
Yeah, they walked her in like Darth Vader, you know?
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
It was just. And okay, we've had the whole conversation about, oh, she made this turn and they, you know, they could have used a lot more time to, you know, develop her to this point so that the audience could see that, you know, the change happen in her internally first. But, you know, I don't want to like rehash all those arguments in this episode. I just went into this episode thinking, okay, let's just assume what happened before this is a given and see how they, you know, whether they all stick right. the landing or not, right?
Well, since I'm the dark nerd, I am going to rehash a little bit of that because it's one of the problems I have with the episode and Danny's arc, you know, as a character.
Okay.
Last episode, you know, everyone was waiting for the bells. Bells went off. Everyone surrendered. And then she murdered everyone in the city
mm-hmm.
like a brat. And then, like I said, they did kind of make her out to be, you know, more of a tyrant coming across the way they, you know, displayed her. But then she comes out saying, we will continue to go around and rescue and save all the other people. It's like, well, does that mean you're just going to keep going around and murder everyone? How do you save people if you're murdering everyone?
I think that was the implication, but look, this is not what she was doing in that moment is nothing new for leaders and tyrants of the world. I mean, that's the language that they use when they go on these, you know, conquering sprees. Is, oh, they're liberating everyone. They're saving everyone. They're bringing everyone into a, you know, a better future where they can, you know, where it could be the new empire or whatever it is. But
yeah, but who did she save at King's Landing? You know?
Well, in her mind, she saved the realm, and she was in the process of breaking the wheel and making. It's kind of like the ends justify the means type of mindset.
You know, it's like that meme, the black guy tapping his head. He's like, I can't lose a job if I don't have one. You know, she's like, well, these people won't have to live under a tyrannical ruler if they're dead. Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I know that you and I and many others have problems with how she got to this point. But I maintain that she was always headed here. And we can, right. You know, we can wring our hands about, you know, if they sort of skipped over some important moments in her transformation to get to this point. But in terms of the story as a whole, okay, yes, that was a problem, but I think that it makes the most sense for the story for her to have gotten to this point. And like I said, for me, at least personally, I tried to just let all the previous episodes be given and just like just see how this episode handled things.
Yeah.
And I like this idea of the reversal where this person who was inspiring and, you know, did all these things is now somebody to be so feared by everyone, you know, especially right. The people who want to do the right thing in the sense of, you know, not killing hundreds of thousands of innocent people.
Yeah.
You know, and it felt very perilous now for like John and Tyrion.
Oh, yeah.
And I really appreciated that the show was able to create that feeling. Now, I totally understand if those kind of moments weren't so impactful for you, given, you know, this sort of like skip over various beats in Dany's character arc. Okay.
Yeah. Season 5.5. They skipped over that.
But, you know, I had read somewhere that the reason the showrunners didn't opt for more episodes in the past two seasons, because I think HBO did offer to do like 10 episode seasons, was they right. said something like, well, we're out of material to adapt. So right. Here's a question that I have. This is something I've been thinking about. Because George R.R. Martin knows generally how he wants to end it, I'm sure. But he's still in the process of figuring out all the little details leading up to it because he's literally still writing like the last two books. Okay. So my question is this. It's like, if they had had like few extra episodes in the past couple seasons and they had gone through more stuff to show us, you know, Dany's transformation and how Arya mm-hmm. got to the point, I don't think there's been enough conversation about how the same thing happened with Arya. Like, she suddenly was like giving up vengeance in that moment with the Hound. Right. And we can there's ways that, you know, you can make sense of it, but I think that there was also some stuff missing in terms of showing us how she got to that place when, I mean, my God, she trained almost her whole life to enact her vengeance, right?
Right.
So anyhow, my question is, if they had, you know, had these extra episodes and had shown more events and taken us in more detail through, you know, these characters' arcs that we feel got a little short shrift, would that have made an equal number of people really pissed later when the book comes out and the books are a lot different?
Yeah, and that's one thing I'm wondering too, is like, George R. R. Martin, is he gonna follow the show with this book, or does he, you know, obviously he probably knows how it ends.
Well, he's been consulting with the show, but I mean, the fact that he's literally still writing the last couple of books means
right.
that he's still working out all the fine details too. Now, I'm sure he has an outline and he has a general idea of like he wants, you know, major events A, B, and C to happen, and he has an idea of like how he wants the end to be, which is probably, you know, fairly consistent, I'm gonna say, with the yeah. end of the show. That's just my guess. But
and that's the thing too, you know, the way he writes, I mean, he is very detail heavy. You know, it's a thick book. You know, it's just full of all sorts of little details and stuff that I'm sure most of our favorite scenes, you know, those little details were in the book.
Yeah.
That they copied over into the show that just made that stand out. And I think a lot of the scenes in this last season, it's like they didn't have that source material with all those, you know, little, call them tips and tricks, you know, just to make the scene just feel, this whole season felt a little off. And I think it's because they didn't have that base source material to go off of and have that in their mind.
Well, I think
it's like they were almost winging it.
I'm going to defend them a little bit in my next few statements. Like, I think that you know, as writers of the show and, well, you know, the guys who've been running the show the whole time.
Right.
I think they were in a way, they were in a lose-lose situation, because anytime you have a show that relies so much on twists and unexpected turns, and even more so shows that rely on, like, subverting your expectations, I guess that's part of what a twist does, but I think that it's harder to have an ending that doesn't divide the fan base, because it's like there's one big question the show seems to be pointing towards, which is who's going to win the Iron Throne at the end, right?
Right.
And so no matter what you pick, there's going to be a portion of the fan base that's really pissed. And I also right. firmly believe that even if they had taken, you know, 3, 4, 5 extra episodes to detail, you know, Daenerys's character arc leading up to this, like, big moment of truth where she makes that decision at King's Landing, I feel like there still would have been backlash, because people would have been like, despite, no matter how brilliantly, you know, it was written, that whole arc, I still feel like there would have been a lot of people who are like, no, you never should have done that with Daenerys, and that's just, you know, you took the show in a stupid direction, and you're just dumb writers because you don't have the books to, you know, lean on anymore, and blah, blah, blah. So I guess what I'm getting down to, and I'm not saying that the criticisms that people have come up with are wrong or anything. What I'm saying is there is really no way they could win. There is no way. It's almost impossible to write a finale to such an acclaimed show that pleases not just everyone, but, like, most fans. That's right. That's my opinion. So in that sense, I try to just, like, take a deep breath and calm the F down and say, look, you know, I have to believe that they did the best that they could. I know a lot of people have been leveling around this criticism that, like, it's lazy writing. Those guys are, like, the last two people you should be calling lazy. I mean, they worked their butts right. off for 8 years making the show, and it is not easy producing television. Writing for and producing, and sometimes, in their cases, directing episodes of this television show. It's just not easy. So it's I don't think it was lazy. They certainly made some decisions that didn't go down so well with a lot of people, but I wouldn't call them lazy.
Right, and I think, like I said, again, the part of that is because for 5 seasons, they were going off of, you know, this rich world, you know, full of details. And then it's almost like trying to imitate art. They went from having all the source material to do all this. And then the last season, they're just kind of like, okay, so we got to keep it the same way without the influence that we had.
They're still making art, and George R.R. Martin is still there consulting with them. It's just that
right.
there's literally no more books for them to adapt. So they're in a way, very uncharted territory.
They're like in limbo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like they're trying to make it true to form, but they're not. It's like if you picked your favorite writer or an artist, and it's like, okay, go do, you know, Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel. Like, that's going to be an issue. And then you can get on, like, YouTube or whatever, and you could have photos or Facebook or something of the actual Sistine Chapel. And even that, like you were talking about, you can't please all the fans. Even the Sistine Chapel has 10,000 dislikes.
I don't... Well, right, know? Right. Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. Well, you know,
like,
and
you'll
just,
never keep everyone happy.
It's also two totally different mediums. You know, television and novels are totally different.
Right.
You have to make... I mean, they made a lot of changes in the show from the books. There's a lot of characters that they didn't include from the books. But at the same time, you have to give them a pass on some stuff because it's a totally different medium. And
yeah.
that's just the way that I feel about that. But I have to say, I'm actually kind of exhausted
right.
about this. I'm a little emotionally exhausted from it all. I was invested in the show for, you know, so many years, and now it's over. And mm-hmm. like, regardless of how it ended, I'm like,
yeah.
Wow.
It's like, okay, well, that was.
And also, I've been talking about it with people. You know, and a lot of people have very, you know, passionate opinions about it. And, you know, you know, I've gotten into it with a few different people, and, like, it's all in good fun and everything, but, like, it's also kind of right. draining, and I'm just kind of feeling drained right now.
Yeah, it takes an emotional toll on you.
Yeah. So let's just talk about, I don't think we have to go through every single scene, but
No, I do think to finish up that scene, though, after her speech, that's when Tyrion comes out, you know.
Yeah, and he throws down his... See, this is another...
I can't remember exactly what he said, but...
Well, she turned to him and she said, you'd committed treason, you let your brother go. And he, like, nodded and he was like, I let my brother go. You slaughtered an entire city.
Yeah. And then that's he pulls off his hand pin and throws it down the stairs. That was a cool scene.
This is another situation where I've heard this argument. It's like, oh, well, he should have been more logical and kept it on and been like, I bow to you and I'm going to, you know, try and advise you better in the future. But this is, you know, comes back to what I was arguing before where it's like, no, he made an emotional decision. He was experiencing crushing guilt. And, like, he just, you know, walked through a pile of dead bodies. No, he wasn't ready.
Yeah, everyone was disgusted with what happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they're going to be like, high five. But, yeah, right after that, they show him being carted off to his cell.
And then John goes to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that scene between them was just, like, that was some great acting. That it was a really... So... John was defending Daenerys, right, in the decisions that she made. Still. But I think that at the same time, he also knew that, like, somebody was probably listening. You know, the walls have ears. And Tyrion pointed out at one point, he was like, well, you're not going to say it because you don't want to betray her. But you know it, you know.
Yeah.
You know you wouldn't have done that. And I just thought that whole conversation was just so powerful between them because you could see in John's eyes that he was... you know, horrified by what had happened. I mean, he even said, like, I can't justify what happened. I'm not even going to try, but at least the war is over. And maybe he did want to believe that, but Tyrion was there to say, come on, did she sound like the war was over to you?
Right.
You know?
No, she's already got the map in her head of where she's going to go.
And I love how Tyrion pushed him in that scene, you know, because Jon doesn't want to be king. He certainly doesn't want to kill the woman that he loves and see that happen again. Right. But yet Tyrion had to keep bringing this stuff up. And then I think it was the scene right after that where Daenerys goes into the throne room and like the snow and the ash are falling down on it. And it's like exactly from her vision way back.
Now, I had a question. Was it actually snow?
I think it was both.
When they showed up to fight, there was no clouds in the sky or snow anywhere.
Maybe it was just ash.
I think it was just ash. And that's if you go back and watch the episode before, you know, when they stormed the city, it was like, it looked like August, you know, it was a hot day and you just saw the heat of the sun. But that's one thing I wanted to bring up too, is like when she's standing at the top of the steps doing her speech to the Unsullied and the camera's behind her looking out over them and the city, it does look like, it looks like Winterfell, you know, and it's just all that ash everywhere, and it does look like snow.
Well, I think that it was primarily ash, but I kept thinking that there was some snow too because the fact that, like, winter is here. But I think it really was ash, and I also think that when she first walked into that room and saw it, from the expression on her face, like, for a moment, you could tell that she remembered that vision from the House of the Undying in, like, season 2 or something.
Yeah.
And that was a really interesting moment. And then, of course, John comes, and I actually love that moment when he starts walking up towards the door, and then what you think is a pile of rubble, like, shakes itself out, and it's the dragon. Yeah. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but then he enters, and you know what? The first thing Dany says... She says, you know, like when she was little, her brother told her it was made out of like 1,000 swords, you know, that Aegon conquered. And actually, fun fact, that's kind of the way that George R. Martin had written it in the books. And he shared online one time this like piece of fan art or something where somebody had drawn the Iron Throne.
An accurate depiction
from the descriptions in the books. And it was like... basically the way she described it in that scene where it was like super tall and like you had to basically climb up there and it was like all, you know, jagged blades like coming out as you go, like go up towards the top. And I thought that would have been really cool to see in the show. That's not the way that they went, which probably was a more believable choice, I guess. Grounded choice.
It would be awkward to see the king or queen scaling, you know, climbing up to get up there. You stay right there. I'll be down in a second to get you. Hold on.
Right. So, you know, in that scene, I think, because obviously this is where John kills her, and I was kind of surprised that it happened so early in the episode.
Yeah, so was I.
Not totally, because there was a lot of epilogue and aftermath to get through after that, I guess.
Yeah, and I was actually expecting, you know, I wasn't sure how it was going to go. I wasn't sure how he was going to die. When she first walked in, and she was, you know, she put her hand on the throne before John came in. Mm-hmm. My daughter's like, this is where she dies. And yeah. I was like, yeah. And I was expecting Arya to, you know, step out of the shadows or drop from the ceiling or, you know, pop up from a trap door or something. And
I actually, you know, yeah, what? By the time we got to this episode, I actually didn't think Arya was going to do it anymore, because they made such a big deal out of her choosing life, you know, in the previous episode. And
yeah, plus she already hit her grand slam.
She did. She did the best she was ever going to do with the Night King. But I think also she recognized that if anybody had a chance, it was going to be Jon.
Right.
And they even had that little discussion right before he went up to see her up the stairs, where she was like, he said something like, she's everyone's queen now. And Arya's like, yeah, try telling that to Sansa.
Yeah.
So that was basically another war that was looming.
Right. And that would be just one more thing that would tear John to pieces, you know, between the queen and his own family.
And, you know, for a second, there was like a second when they were talking when I thought John might actually join with her, when he said,
right.
It was like right before he stabbed her, you know, where he said,
yeah,
you are my queen now and always. And, oh, God, for like this split
second. And then they
kissed. Yeah, they kissed.
Shoosh.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that's John, you know.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was thinking. I was like, okay, he's joining sides, and now what's going to happen? Then you hear the swish.
It was very true to his character, but I love... there's a lot of things about that scene that I love, but, like, first of all, he was presented with everything he could have ever have wanted. You know, anything that anybody could ever have wanted. Like, he would have ruled by her side. They would have, you know, done... They would have made the world in their image, or at least that's, you know, what she was saying. The way that they wanted it to be. But ultimately, John is John, right? He has that conscience that was instilled into him by Ned Stark, you know, who raised him. And he ultimately chose, even though it tore him apart and he knew that he was probably going to die after that.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I really liked about that scene was you could tell that he was torn. You know, he didn't just walk in there and be like, all right, like, you know,
now you die.
Well, I think he was still wavering on whether or not he was going to kill her up until the last minute, because the last second, because he gave her like every opportunity to show him that she really could still be a moral person and a moral ruler, right?
Yeah.
Because he kept asking her. He said, you know, there were children, there were dead, and then he was like, forgive Tyrion. And she said, no. And he was like, we need to build a realm of mercy. And then, you know, she basically had her whole, like, tyrant double-think speech where she's talking about how, oh, yes, it's going to be mercy, but we have to, you know, do these things to get there. And she was like, because I know what is right. Or she said, I know what is good. He asked her, how do you know the world will be good that we make? And she said, I know what is good. And that was like, those were like alarm bells, right? Because obviously she just slaughtered all like 100,000 innocent people, you know?
Right.
And where he said, I don't know what's right. Because in that moment, of course, he's considering killing her.
Yeah.
And all of that. So anyways, I thought the way that they played that scene was just really moving. And of course, as soon as she dies, the dragon, like, knows, right? And it flaps in there.
Yeah, Drogon. You can hear him screaming in the background. Then he starts flying around.
Yeah.
Then he starts walking. And I was like, okay, and now Jon's going to die.
Right. Yeah, I thought the dragon might kill him. But
yeah.
I think it also...
I thought it was just going to snatch him up like the guy on the toilet in Jurassic Park.
Right. But no, it didn't. But it did give like a primal scream and like... Mm-hmm. I love that it torched the Iron Throne.
That was a cool scene that it did that. And at first it like shot the flames like over his shoulder or around, you know, just because it was angry. Right. And then I was like, oh, it's going to melt the throne. And that's when, you know, it turned its full blast.
Well, it wasn't it wasn't just cool to like see, because I think that that really encapsulated it was very symbolic of like where the not just where the show has ended up, but where, and like emblematic of like what happened to the Seven Kingdoms, but it's also kind of symbolic of Daenerys's journey, her arc, because she ended up just like destroying everything. Really?
Yeah.
You know?
One thing about the Drogon, you know, melting the throne, it's like, how smart are these dragons? Why would, I mean, how could he know the throne was really why everyone was here? Well, you know, because the dragons weren't really played off as intelligent beings.
Well, first of all, you know? I don't think it needs to be super intelligent to just want to destroy something in that moment when its mother has died, right? I don't think it has to be super smart for that. But, you know, I think that there's some magic involved in terms of its connection to Dany, and I think it's reasonable to say it might have understood that that object had significance to her, even if it didn't quite understand, you know, exactly what that significance was. And frankly, I've always thought the dragons were really smart. You know, it doesn't show them like sitting down and stroking their chins and playing chess or anything, but like
smoking a pipe like Gandalf.
Yeah, but they're smart enough that they can be trained, and you know, they remember things and yada yada yada. So I don't know. I didn't have a problem with that.
Here, boy. Here. Smell this. Smell this.
Okay.
Now go get the Iron Throne. Go get the Iron Throne.
Burn the bad man. Burn the bad man. Yeah. So, anyways, that was an amazing scene. And then I thought, like, it just felt so poetic and right that it would, like, pick her up and take her away.
Yeah, I was expecting it before it happened, too. Mm. And then I'm like, okay, where's it taking her?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And
taking her back home?
I don't know. Just off, away, never to return is kind of how I think about it. And I just love that shot where Jon is standing there in the foreground looking out like the hole in the wall, and the dragon's like flapping away through the smoke and the mist and the fog or whatever, and you know, the melted Iron Throne is just like all over the floor, like coming down the steps. I just thought that was a really cool shot, and one, you know, that it's the kind of shot that like the kind of iconic shot that you need in a big finale like this, and I thought it was just really cool visually.
Right.
But so after that, though, obviously we go back to Tyrion, who's got like a big, longer beard at this point, and it's like weeks later, and they take him to that big meeting, that gathering of all the like biggest lords and ladies of Westeros.
Yeah, there was a scene, I think, I can't remember before that. It might have been, I can't remember how they played it out. I think it was before or right after that scene, but they've switched to Jon, who was also in a cell because he'd been
captured. That's afterwards, because Tyrion comes to visit.
Was it after?
Yeah, because Tyrion comes to tell him what his sentence is and stuff. It's an interesting reversal from their previous meeting in a way.
Yeah, it's funny though, because when they show him with his beard, I was like, oh, look, guess who it is? The Big Lebowski. You know, he lost his glasses.
Right. Yeah, but yeah, that meeting was really interesting because like Tyrion comes as a prisoner and he ends up like running the meeting, basically.
Right. Yeah, Grey Worm's like, you are not to talk, slave.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think it really is true to his character, too, because he is a smart, clever guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's made really bad mistakes. Yeah. But that isn't, I mean, you know, smart people make mistakes. It's not unrealistic, I don't think. But I thought, so, okay, you remember how when they finally turn to him and say, okay, well, who do you think ought to be the king? Because there's a couple aborted attempts, right? Because first he says,
right.
You know, it comes about because Grey Worm's like, well, he should die. And he says, well, it's not for you. They're talking about Jon. And Tyrion's like, it's not for you to decide. It's the king or queen. And obviously there's no king or queen. And then that's when he has the suggestion. And then I love when Sansa's uncle, he was the dude, by the way, who ended up marrying the Frey girl at the Red Wedding. That was him.
Yeah, I recognize his face, but I couldn't remember what his role was.
Yeah, he was the guy who ended up marrying the Frey after Rob, you know, broke his promise.
Oh, okay.
Right? And then they carried him and the bride out, and then they killed everybody at the Red Wedding. Anyways, that was him.
Right.
I did think it was funny that he stood up and he's like giving this like very lofty speech, and then Sansa's like, sit down.
Uncle, sit down. And then she like You know, he turns and looks at her, and she looks at him, and then, like, gestures with her eyes. She looks at his chair yeah. and kind of does that little nod.
Yeah. And everybody's, like, holding back, like, chuckles, you know? That was great. Yeah. And then...
And for all of the eagle-eyed viewers watching this scene...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you caught that. There was the two water bottles that were...
I saw one.
...left behind.
Yeah.
I didn't see either during the watching, but yeah. of course the internet showed.
Now that it's been caught, I'm sure they will digitally erase it like they did with the coffee cup for the Blu-ray release, I'm sure. But but anyways, like, so the point that I'm trying to get to is, like, when he gets to that thing where they turn to him and they're like, well, somebody's got to be king. And Davos says something like, well, who do you think it ought to be? You? And he was like, well, no. But then he gets that whole story about how stories are the most powerful, and that's what unites people, right?
Right.
And he talks about... So this actually, I think, goes back to what Varys said. He said it a couple times. I think the first time he said it was when in one of the early seasons, season one or two or something, where he says, it's like there's a, you know, there's a nobleman, a king, and a, you know, whatever, and then there's a mercenary. Like, who has the most power? And it boils down to his statement that, like, power resides where people believe that it does. And essentially what Tyrion is saying in that speech of his is that what unites people is belief in where the power is. And stories,
it's not the bloodline.
And stories are, like, a good story is about creating that kind of belief. And so in a way, he's honoring Varys and the wisdom that Varys had about power by bringing this up and saying, well, it's got to be Bran and that whole thing. And by the way, I think that the little change that they made where now the lords and the ladies decide who the king is going to be when the king dies every time, as opposed to it passing down through, like, blood right. I think that was a really, I think that was a believable step that they could take in that moment, because a lot of people were saying, oh, it's going to turn into a democracy and, you know, or, you know, they're going to.
Well, that's when, you know, Sam stood up and he was like, you know, they did the whole speech about what's best for the people should be decided by the people.
And they laugh him down.
Beat, yeah. And everyone just starts cracking up. And he just, like, sits down all embarrassed and it's like,
and sure, democracy would be better. But the thing is that this is not a world that's ready to take the leap into democracy. Like, if they would have somehow done that at the end of this episode, I wouldn't have believed it. It would have been trite. It would have been unrealistic. It would have made sense, really. So this was a change.
Rebuild all the rubble and build some voting booths.
And if you remember in our last podcast episode where we were making a couple predictions, I said I feel like there's going to be a new system in place, and this was it. And I think that this was a very believable step, and so I was satisfied with that aspect of it.
Right.
I don't know that everybody sitting there understood what he meant when he said three-eyed raven.
yeah, because they weren't all there for the whole story like the viewer was.
Well, it's not just that, but, like, the three-eyed raven is not, like, a widely known figure, I don't think, because even... Yeah. Up in the north, Bran first tried to tell Sansa or somebody about it, they were like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what that means.
Right.
So anyhow, that's maybe a minor point, but I don't know. I thought that was all pretty satisfying.
Yeah, I didn't have any problems with it. I figured it was going to be Sansa. You know, I thought she would be the one to step up, because I knew, you know, Jon never wanted it, and at that point in the episode he was imprisoned.
Well, the fact that Sansa didn't step up was made very clear when they were all kind of glancing back and forth as to who would be the new king, because if you were in the camp that thought Sansa just wanted to be queen of the Seven Kingdoms, you're wondering in that moment, like, wait a minute, why isn't she saying anything? Well, she's not saying anything because she doesn't want to be queen of the Seven Kingdoms.
Right.
She wants the North to be autonomous. She wants the North to be free, but she doesn't. You know, I think ever since she went to King's Landing, in, like, the first couple seasons, like, she realized that's not what she wanted exactly, you know?
Yeah.
And she was very, very savvy, and, you know, when it came down to her vote, she was like, well, you're going to be a great king, but not of us in the North. And I thought that was also a nice way to pay off the fact that the North fended off the Army of the Dead.
Yeah.
In a way, I am a little bit ambivalent, though. I do have some mixed feelings about Sansa being the Queen of the North. Not because, I'm not saying I don't think she should be queen. I'm not saying I don't think she deserves it or anything like that. I just was like, in that moment when she made that calculation, there's part of me that's a little uncomfortable that she was like risking more wars and conflict to do that. But I don't know. On further reflection, I kind of feel like that was just her being really, really smart and knowing that there wouldn't be any more because of everything that the whole realm had just been through, I guess. So
yeah, it was basically a truce, you know, between all the kingdoms at this point, because they have all banded together to defeat not one, but the two biggest enemies together.
Well, Davos, and, you know,
that was kind of a
Davos said,
new era of peace.
Yeah. Well, Davos said it basically when he was like, we've had enough of slitting each other's throats. Let's move on from this. We know how it ends. So anyways, but that's after that scene is when Tyrion goes to Jon and they have, you know, another conversation. And I have to say, even though, so Jon, if you think about it in retrospect, okay, he ended up in a very similar position as Daenerys in terms of, you know, he was the exiled, child who had a claim to the throne. And he, you know, had this opportunity to take the whole kingdom with Daenerys, right? And like be the ruler, right, and do all this stuff. And he also has been in the position many times of power where he made life and death decisions and all of this stuff. But at the end of the day, the difference between them is that Jon is still asking himself if what he's doing is right. Because he asks Tyrion in that scene, he says, was it right what I did? And, you know, and he says it doesn't feel right, but yet he did do that and he knew what the greater effect of it would be, which is why he did it, right? But at the same time, he is still, like, every step of the way asking himself what is right. Now, he's made mistakes, right? He's done awful things. He's killed people. But I think that what the show and the story is trying to tell us there is that it's important to always be asking yourself that. Because when Daenerys finally just decided that she knew what was right and that she got to decide what was right, that is basically when she became a tyrant, you know?
Yeah, it was horrific.
Or at least, you know, that's kind of a symptom of her being the tyrant. And so I guess I like the themes of the show and the whole Game of Thrones story. And I really like what it tried to do in terms of showing us how those themes play out and kind of subverting our expectations and stuff. So from my point of view, that's some of the stuff that I really love about the show. And maybe that's also why I am a lot more forgiving of them skipping over a couple beats in Daenerys's arc, because ultimately I like what the show is saying, and the execution for the show on the whole overall, I think, was remarkably well done. And the fact that I had, you know, significant problems with like a couple episodes doesn't take away from the entire experience that much for me.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does.
Yeah. What about you? Like, what's your reaction to what I just said, basically?
You know, how everything fits together, I mean, I think you nailed it pretty good. I didn't really think as in-depth as you did, obviously. But, you know, there's really no other way they could have done it. You know what I mean? Having everything play out the way it did. And I really liked overall the way everything ended, but everyone had to do what they had to do to get there.
Yeah.
You know, and in the end, it's just, there wasn't really many options left. You know, the way they played it out at the beginning of the episode, I had no idea how it was going to happen. But in the end, they did tie it together real well.
Yeah.
And everyone basically had their own decisions, but not really their decisions. It was a choice. You know, you can do this or, you know, whatever. But,
I feel like the previous episode, the penultimate one that was the subject of so much scorn because of Daenerys and not enough discussion again about what got skipped over in Arya's arc. But in any case, I think that episode was very much about people making a decision as to the path that they're going to take.
Yeah.
I guess for John, it was really this episode because he wasn't in a position to really make a difference so much in last episode. Right. But that's kind of my impression of it. Now,
and Tyrion made his decision. Jaime made his decision. You know, John was still following along. Arya, you know, that's when she made her decision with the Hound and stuff. So, yeah, they all kind of turned off on their own paths before that. But in the end, with John, it's like, you know, after killing Daenerys, he didn't really have much options because he didn't want to be king. He didn't want to stay in King's Landing.
Yeah.
I think he always felt more at home in the North.
Absolutely.
You know.
And, you know, and I think that despite the fact that, you know, he got exiled to Castle Black, like, first of all, he didn't stay there. He just went north with the Wildlings, who all revere him, by the way.
Right.
Because, frankly, they wouldn't even exist anymore if it wasn't for him. And they know that. And, you know, there's that whole scene after the battle against the undead where Tormund is, like, lavishing praise on him and, you know, they're all loving him. And I actually think it's, I mean, the whole thing is kind of bittersweet because you want, you know, you don't want them to punish John, but at the same time, it is a very good political decision. It's a good compromise, like Tyrion says.
Yeah, it's like if they had just, like, pardoned him, that'd be weird.
It would have, you know, so. Because
he did kill,
so it felt, know,
the queen.
It felt realistic, it felt real what happened, but at the same time, like, I also am happy that, I think that that was actually the best ending that John could hope for in a way, because now he gets to go up north with these people who he can be in their community with them. They're not, they don't have the same type of power structure with, like, lords and ladies and things. So it's not a concern as to, like, who's going to rule. They're the free folk.
Right. They're all a bunch of tree hugging hippies.
And he gets to, come on, he can meet, you know, some wildling girl again.
Some of them, some of them girls are pretty cute.
Well, you know, he'll meet a redhead again because, like, half of them have red hair, and, you know, they'll be up there, and he can have a little family, and it doesn't have to, it's not going to matter that he's, you know, a Targaryen and, like, all of this stuff, and he can just have a life. He's not a bastard. He doesn't have to have the responsibility of being a king or a great lord. You know, he can just, like, live his best life in the way that he wants to live it. And he's got Ghost. I was so happy that, like, Ghost was there waiting for him and he got to, like, give him a little scratch. Right,
and I love when he walked in and, you know, the doors open up and he walks in and looks up and you see Tormund up on the railing, like, looking down, and they share that look, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah, I actually think that was a pretty hopeful ending for John, despite everything.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, on one hand, when they first were walking out of the wall, I was like, oh, man, well, it kind of sucks that they have to live on, like, a freaking glacier. But then, like, you see, like, little plants sprouting up, and they are actually walking through a forest at the end. So it wasn't like they were just going to, like, live in a hellish, like, you know, wasteland. Like, there's actually life up there. It's just really far north, and it's cold.
Yeah, yeah. Someone even mentioned, like, there's, like, just right before the scene cut when they were going through the woods, it's like you saw this green leaf come down, and it's like, oh, maybe now that the Night King's gone, maybe he was a source, you know, of the cold. Maybe it's gonna, like, be spring, or maybe spring's coming now that he's gone.
No, that was the very, very end, and I did like how they kind of focused on the remaining, like, Stark children at the end. So it was like, it was this really interesting montage of, like, you know, Jon's walking to the right, Sansa's walking to the right, Arya's walking to the right. They're all getting there, like, you know, they're picking up their stuff and getting ready. They're walking. It's like all from the same angles, this, like, really interesting montage. And I thought it was really cool. And it was very true to, like, who they had become over the course of this whole story, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just a nice little way to end it, I thought. But of course, before that, we did get Brienne writing Jaime's story in that big book of all the knights of the kingdoms.
Right.
And that was, I thought that was really cool. That was like, you know, she still loved him despite everything. And it was like the best thing she could do for him was to record all the things that he had done. And of course, that last line, died defending his queen, that also in a way is like redeeming what he did when he killed the king before, because everybody always gave him a lot of shit about, being the Kingslayer and breaking his vows and like all of that stuff, yeah. Right? So,
and he really did have, you know, a heroic turn. He, you know, he turned away from his evil ways from the beginning mostly, and you know, he grew his heart
well
and changed a lot. But in the very end, he was going back to bang his sister.
He was again. A very complicated character who did mm-hmm. some really good things and did some really, really awful things. And that's what Game of Thrones has consistently given us. And I really right. don't have a big problem with his ending. I know a lot of people wanted him to have like a happier ending and stuff, but I think it was appropriate that he, I mean, you know, say what you will about their actual death with the castle falling on them. But I don't think he, I would have, if he would have gotten like some kind of happy ending, it would have felt really trite and it wouldn't have felt right. It wouldn't have sat well with me.
Yeah. Like he becomes a minstrel from Monty Python and Holy Grail, you know?
Yeah.
Brienne would be the knight.
Yeah.
She'd be King Arthur and he'd be da-da-da-da-da-da.
Right, with That'd the coconuts. Hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then I love the little scene they had of the new small council where Tyrion's the hand, Sam Tarly is the yeah. Grand Meister, Bronn is the master Bronn's of the coin, Davos is the right. master of ships, Brienne is master of the Kingsguard. And of course, Bran comes in for like a minute. But I like how, you know, we get this hope at the end of the show because now there's people in charge who we see them having an actually like reasonable conversation about how to run things that's not
right.
primarily driven by power plays and
right.
just like
yeah,
pure
they're all
evil.
Working towards the same goal.
Yeah.
You know, they're not fighting for their own control.
Right. That was just a nice little hopeful note, you know, to leave us on. So how did you feel? Oh, and the last thing, when Sam comes in and he's got the book, the big, huge book, The Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, yeah.
And Tyrion's like, oh, was he really harsh on me? Was he complimentary? And he's like, you're not in the book.
Yeah.
Which actually harkens back to that other thing Varys said about, like, you know, nobody will ever know, but those of us who do, we're very grateful.
Right.
I think he must have said that. Was it after he killed Tywin?
That was a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago. But anyways, so there we are. That was the end. So first of all, how do you feel about Bran being the king? And anything else at the end that you want to remind
me? You know, like I said, I originally thought it was Sansa, but she made her choice not to do it. And I don't know. That's an interesting choice to have Bran.
Well, I've heard it both ways, right? Like some people think that doesn't make any sense or that it's too weird or something. And other people are like, oh, yeah, that's great. I think that he's a good choice for that. I happen to think that I really like that that's a choice that the story made or that the, you know, that
well,
the writers
Well, he would be
made.
A fair and just king, too. And also,
yeah.
he would probably know a lot more than he let on, because that's what he does.
Well,
he's the guy that sits in the corner.
Yeah.
I saw what you did there, you know. So,
well, he can actually see into history, you know.
Right.
And I think Tyrion was right about the fact that, like, yeah, that's basically what we need. You don't want to be the king. You don't care about power. That also makes you a great choice. And then yeah. somebody was like, but he can't have sons and blah, blah, blah. And Tyrion was like, good.
Yeah,
we won't ever.
Yeah,
have
we don't
to be...
need that. We want to mm-hmm. get rid of the whole bloodline lineage.
And that was,
you know.
And I just love that. And it's like a lot of people have been saying, me included, myself included, by the way. Like, what's Bran doing this season? Like,
yeah.
he had some good secrets to reveal that were very, very vital to everything that happened. But other than, like, dispensing little, you know, nuggets of wisdom and things here and there,
yeah.
he hasn't been too active.
Right. All of the pivotal moments, you know, he was miles away,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
That's why there's that meme on the internet you saw where mm-hmm. you don't help out with the school project, but you still get an A.
Right.
You know?
But so, like, a lot of people were saying, well, like, why did he go through all this stuff if in the final season he's just going to sit there? So, A, you know, he kind of revealed, like, a world-changing secret once or twice. But, B, now it makes sense. And he had that line of, like, why do you think I came all this way? And like, there's been,
right.
like, debate as to, like, how much of the future that he can see. And he did have, like, when he first met the Three-Eyed Raven and he was, like, in training or whatever, briefly, he did have some flashes of the future, which included a dragon flying over King's Landing, which we only just saw in this season. But I think that at least the way that I read it is that he can catch like glimpses into the future, but he can't really see like every little detail in the future like he can with the past. And that's just what makes sense to me. I think they've left it kind of ambiguous, but that's just how I read it. And, you know, so when he had that line, like, why do you think I came all this way? A, I love that line. You know, B, I think that just supports the idea that he can see, like, some things in the future. And so he thought that it, you know, that it could come to this.
Yeah. I like the way also how he traps Tyrion into being his hand.
Right. You know. Right. Right. That was good. And I love Tyrion's.
I don't want to be the hand. I don't want to be king.
Yeah. I love Tyrion's reaction where he's like, no, pick anybody else.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But
I just quit that job.
The fact that Tyrion now recognizes that, you know, just because you think you're wise doesn't mean that you are. That's kind of like what, you know, that's kind of the position that Jon's been operating from this whole time. Right. Because I mentioned he's constantly questioning whether what he's doing is right. And I feel like that's something that Tyrion takes forward with him. And that's going to make him a better hand than he was before.
Right.
It's just because he's been through so much and everything that he's learned, I guess.
Yeah, and hopefully moving on in the future, there won't be as much of the rivalry between all the kingdoms, at least for a while.
For a while.
Kind of easy. We can't go on without mentioning Captain Arya Sparrow Columbus.
Yeah, so I thought that that was really interesting, and I really like that. That's what she's doing now. And a lot of people are saying that should be a spinoff show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, if she played, you know, Arya in a spinoff show, I think that could be really cool.
Yeah, the hardest part of making that show might be getting Maisie Williams to star in it. Because, I mean, she's already been in Game of Thrones since 2011. I mean, she was like 11 years old when it started, and now she's like 21 or something. So, you know, she might want to do other things. However, so before we actually get into talking about the spinoffs and prequels and things that HBO is working on, why don't we just sum up with our final thoughts about this episode and show? So why don't you go?
Like I said, the last episode, I was dreading what they were going to do to end the series. And after, you know, watching it, there was a couple things that I didn't like. And especially when we were in the last scenes, like when they were doing the whole Jon heading up north and Arya heading, which did she go east?
West. What's or west of Westeros?
She went west. Mm-hmm. What's west of Westeros? Yeah, all that. And my daughter, she's sitting there. She's like, what's the deal with the white horse? And I was like, nothing. I told you it was stupid.
And I know you hated that.
Yeah, it didn't. And they even made a point of showing the white horse in this episode again for no reason. It's like, who cares?
They did.
Anyway. Yeah. In the beginning, when that whole scene where Tyrion's walking through the city, like the first couple minutes, they show in the foreground, like the very front of the screen, is that little white horse clutched in the dead girl's hand.
Oh, the toy. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the toy.
I see. I don't have a problem with that.
Thought there was some symbolism behind that, and I told her last episode.
Well, there is. You just don't like it.
Yeah. Well. Anyway.
Yeah.
I like the way, like I said, there really wasn't many other choices for the characters to, you know, many directions for them to go.
Yeah.
You know, in keeping true to form, true to character, and I think everything worked out. With Bronn on the throne, Sansa back in Winterfell.
With
and
Bran
Jon
on the throne.
Again,
Bronn.
Being like the king. Oh, Bronn. Yeah, Bran, Bronn.
That would have been a totally
different
ending.
I call him Brondon. Brondon. Yeah. And, you know, Jon, who's basically now the king in the north again.
Well, he's not king, he's just in the real north.
Yeah.
He's with the free folk.
Yeah.
Again, I
revere him.
It feels like the right ending for him. It really does. Yeah. It really does. It feels like the right ending for Sansa. It feels like the right ending for Arya. And
And the scene where Jon says, oh, Arya, you can come visit me at Castle Black. And she's like, no, I can't remember exactly what she says, but she's like, I'm leaving.
Yeah, she said, I'm not going back.
I'm going with.
Yeah, that was, so in that moment when she said that, you know, it turned into the, like, the forever goodbye between those two characters. And I actually found that really touching, the way that they pulled that off, because there's just so much going on behind their eyes. Like, those actors, Kit Harington and Maisie Williams, man, they really pulled off, like, a really touching moment for me in that scene. Yeah, I mean, my final thoughts, I guess I've really talked about it. I was very satisfied by the ending and where things ended up, even if I would have preferred them to put a few more episodes in there to detail especially Arya and Daenerys' character arcs.
Right.
But I also think that this is always where it was heading to begin with, and I think they did set it up. Now, foreshadowing is not the same as character development, okay? I'm acknowledging that. Right. But I guess, like I said before, I mean, I'm not as... I was able to get past it a little bit easier than a lot of people, I think, because A, I like where everything ended up, and B, one of the things that I've always liked about Game of Thrones is the constant, like, you know, they subvert these tropes and these things that we're used to seeing in fantasy stories.
Right.
Right. And so I like that we got the characters to this point and that events A, B, and C happened. And even though I have problems with a few, you know, episodes, to me, the overall experience is like, this show is still a masterpiece. Now, because of the problems, this show is not going to go into my top five of all time. But it might be in my top 10. It probably is in my top 10 shows of all time. And like I said, I feel like in a way there was definitely going to be backlash against the ending no matter what, because that's just how these things work.
Screw you, Michelangelo.
Well, you really can't please everybody. And when people have invested in these characters and these storylines for 8 years, everybody has a different idea about how it's going to end. So I'm sorry, I don't want to get into that. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I mean, I always hope that people are able to enjoy a show, you know, for their own edification. But if you don't like something, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just, you know, this is how I feel, and how I feel is I'm happy with the way things ended.
Well, yeah, it was, like I said, it tied up things, and it started, you know, new chapters for all the Starks. You know, they're basically, you know, like, Jon's not ruling, but I mean, he's going to be the leader. They look up to him, they revere him. So basically, the Starks have taken back everything, you know, and they're going to work together, you know, as they can in the future. And they really all kind of went off on their own personal journeys, and they all fit. Where they're going to be.
So overall, I'm happy with where the series ended. I'm going to be thinking about it for many days and weeks and probably months to come. And to me, that is also the sign of a really good show or movie what have you, you know, book or what have you.
Yeah. And also, currently, my daughter's watching the entire series over again. She's in season 2, so I keep getting bits and pieces of here and there, and sometimes I sit down and watch an episode. And I am very interested in seeing how the next book is going
to
turn out.
Oh, for sure. We just don't know when it's going to be available.
Right.
So this is, I think, a natural point for us to talk about the, like, Game of Thrones spinoffs and prequels that have been, you know, rumored and people have talked about from HBO. So I took the liberty of looking up the information on this and what HBO has officially said about it. So first, there's a prequel, which is supposed to take place, like, I think thousands of years before. Yeah, okay, so this is what HBO said officially. Taking place thousands of years before the events of Game of Thrones, the series chronicles the world's descent from the Golden Age of Heroes into its darkest hour. From the horrifying secrets of Westeros' history to the true origin of the White Walkers, the mysteries of the East to the Starks of legend, only one thing is for sure, it's not the story we think we know. There's no timeline as to when that's going to be out, but I believe they have filmed the pilot episode, and that's under review right now. Naomi Watts is supposed to star in it.
Mm-hmm.
Other stars that they've attached are Jonathan Whitehouse, who was in a show called Poldark. Miranda Richardson, who was Rita Skeeter in Harry Potter, the Harry Potter movies. Naomi Ackie, she was in Star Wars. She's going to be in Star Wars Episode 9. She's been in Doctor Who. Denise Gao from Colette, Jamie Campbell Bauer, Sheila Atim, Ivano Jeremiah, Georgie Henley, Alex Sharp, and Toby Regbo. I apologize if I mispronounced any of those. So there's that prequel, right? But then they've also talked about these four spinoffs that they're developing. And a couple of them have been, they've been working on them hand in hand with George R.R. Martin. So a couple things about these. So basically, they have five. But basically, what HBO came out and said later is, well, wait a second. We're not sure how many spinoff shows we're actually going to have.
Yeah.
It could be just one.
Yeah.
Basically, what they've said is the bar has been set really high by Game of Thrones, and we're not just going to release like a ton of them. Like, we're still figuring out the format because they may end up being limited series, right? And basically what they're doing is they're developing these projects and they're seeing which ones are good enough, and then they'll decide. So,
and again, they're not going off of books that are already written. They're basically, you know, creating it from scratch. So
right.
It's going to take a lot of work.
Right. So I'm really interested to see how that goes. I feel like I don't think any of them, at least the ones that they've planned so far, are going to be Arya going off and exploring the West, because in one of the articles I read, they said they're not going to be like sequels. They're all going to take place before the events of the Game of Thrones show.
Right.
So I think that's probably it. I mean, do you have anything else, any final parting words on Game of Thrones for us?
Last episode where we talked about episode 5, we're much higher energy, you know, because there was still the hope and the wonder and the the what ifs going on. And this episode, you know, we are a little more reserved, a little quieter, a little somber, because it has been one hell of a trip, you know, to get here. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's exhausting, and it's just like, all right, now that's done. It's kind of like after a vacation when you have to come home and it's like, all right, now let's get ready for work tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, you just got to take a breath and, you know, I'm still absorbing it. You know, it's Tuesday today. We just saw it. I just saw it yesterday.
I'm still in, like, I feel like the immediate aftermath of processing the episode. I mean, it's been a couple days. I did just watch it again this morning or this afternoon, whatever. But I still kind of am processing it. And I feel like I'll have more thoughts about it after I think about it for like a month, maybe, you know, and let it kind of stew and simmer in the back of my mind. But as of now, I'm pretty satisfied with it. I mean, there's some things that I wish we would have gotten, in a sense, because I think they would have been satisfying. Like, you know, a couple extra episodes for these arcs. But also, I feel like there's something missing from the whole story about the Night King and the Undead Army. Like, I feel like there's something missing there.
Well, they're the bad guy. That's it. They don't really go into anything else.
They were a non-human existential threat, so I guess, you know, you don't need to,
And one thing, it's like, they told us a year and a half ago that there was only going to be, you know, 6 episodes in this season. It's like, well, why did you have to come out of the gate already limiting yourself? Why didn't you...
Well, they have to decide that up front for, like, budgetary reasons and things like that. And so then they announce it. You know, so that the expectations will be in line with how many episodes there's going to be. But I think that the question that we keep coming back to is like, well, why did they make that choice? And that's, we kind of talked about it earlier.
Right.
When the showrunner said, well, we've run out of material to adapt, really. And they probably have some, like, you know, big moments from the outline, you know, from George R.R. Martin. But other than that, it comes back to that question that I asked before is like, okay, well, they could make up some other stuff. Well, it wouldn't have changed the end. And, you know, they could put some stuff in there, but then they're just going to get shit on by a whole, you know, a big portion of the fans later when it doesn't match up with the books.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. Just one more episode. Just one.
Just one. Just give us
episode,
one more.
I think episode 4. You know,
I was thinking, I wonder if it would be worthwhile for somebody out there in, like, YouTube land to make you know, their own, like, episodes that go in between the episodes to give us, like, the stuff with Danny that everybody's, like, crying about not having. Like,
episode
if somebody
3.
Ever...
5, 4.
I mean,
5.
I don't... that's not something that I would do. But if those ever, like, come out, I would make that... I would watch them. As long as it's like, some tongue-in-cheek thing where they're just, like, complaining about how awful the writers or something. Like, if it's an actual earnest attempt to, like, add something to the narrative, I would be interested in seeing that.
The entire cast of Game of Thrones played by 4 actors.
I was kind of thinking it would be one of those, like, cheesy, like, animated things, you know?
Yeah.
But who knows? Whatever. Okay.
4 actors, 3 voices apiece.
All right. Well, my final words on this are, it had some problems, but in the end, I was pretty satisfied with where things ended up. And there we go. I'm going to be spending some time thinking about this. And if nothing else, coming away from the show, thinking deeply about these themes and these different things that they've explored is a win for me. So
yeah,
that's how I feel about it, despite, you know, any of the problems that I may have had with some of the show. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening to our final Game of Thrones reaction podcast episode. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if one day we do like a series retrospective episode or something. But for now, I think we're just going to let it lie. And thanks, everybody, for listening. This is Captain Will signing out.
And this is the Nerd also bidding you adieu. But before I go, just like all of the different endings you wished that you had seen take place on screen to fulfill and finalize this series, Mecha Dragon is filling up your feeds on all your social medias. You can subscribe to us and listen at mechadragon.net. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, CastBox, Stitcher, and wherever else you catch your podcast. Hit us at mechadragonshow@gmail.com. Have a great day. I think after the show's over, we're going to go take a nap. So peace out, Poindexters. Have a good one.
All right, everybody. Until next time. Bye-bye. Our music is Overworld by Kevin MacLeod. From Incompetech.com, licensed under a Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0, creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0.